face, and I'm not sure of the correct answer. None of what has happened tonight makes sense. Not the unlocked door, Dr. Barnes's booby-trapped house, or his claim that he wants me to kill him. For these things to be true, Dr. Barnes must have always known what I've been doing. Nothing I've done has been in secret. But there have been no cameras. I disabled the tracking device in my bracelet. He couldn't have planted something in my clothes because I've not always worn the same... My eyes fall on the university bag that sits on the far edge of the table. I've rarely been without it since it was given to me after the testing. The bag is constructed with strong material to prevent it from ripping. The bottom especially is thick to ensure the bag can hold all the books we have to carry around campus. At least that's what I assumed. A bag, like every other bag. Without memory of the testing, I had no reason to question it when it was given to me. And once I did remember, I never gave it a second thought. I put the glass back on the table and lean back in my seat. Was the testing bag designed to monitor our movements, too? I'm impressed, my dear. You're correct about this bag containing a device that allows me to better understand your daily activities. But the satchel you carried during the testing did not. My staff believed the recorders and the bracelets were sufficient to obtain the information we needed. You proved them wrong then, as you have here at the university, just as I hoped you would. You hoped? Dr. Barnes reaches across the table, picks up the glass, and toasts me with it. He swallows some of the liquid and frowns as he sets the half-empty glass back on the table. I forgot how unpleasant that taste is. It was something we always meant to fix but never got around to. Not a surprise, I suppose, since no one who drinks it remembers the bitter flavor once the testing is over. Ah, well, perhaps now you will allow me to explain in my own way. He places his hands on the table and begins to speak. When the United Commonwealth was formed, it was decided that a different selection method would be necessary to ensure our country did not fall victim to the mistakes of the leaders in our past. For a while, that selection was easy, since the boundaries of our country did not extend beyond the city. It was a simple matter for officials to observe those who naturally assumed leadership roles in the work they'd been assigned. However, after the first colonies were established and our population grew, there were problems. Leaders struggled to be decisive when faced with difficult decisions like power distribution. Fights broke out in parts of the city where power allocation was at its lowest. To stave off frustration and violence, two new colonies were established and tens of thousands of people sent out of the city to revitalize areas far to the east. Due to rushed decisions, those areas were poorly scouted. Only a handful of those who left the city survived. We studied the failed colonies in school. Those who survived talked of poisonous windstorms, vicious mutated animal attacks, and contamination in the ground that caused anything that was planted to die within days. My father always wondered how the scientists who reviewed those areas missed such deadly contamination and believed mistakes were made. He was right. Thousands of people died because of those errors. Those who returned shared their story. They questioned the current leadership. The civil war that loomed would have torn apart the city and the country. To prevent that, a compromise was reached between the current leaders and those who opposed them, ensuring that new leadership would not commit the same mistakes. The university, under my grandfather's guidance, was charged with selecting students with the qualities necessary to lead and with preparing them for the positions they would hold. A year after that change was made, the testing was established. Gun in hand, Dr. Barnes stands and walks the length of the room. It's hard to determine what makes a good leader and to test for those qualities. For the next 10 years, the testing was comprised of written and hands-on challenges meant to determine whether a candidate had the knowledge required to help lead the revitalization mission. Those who attended the university were the brightest and most promising minds our country had to offer. And yet many of them faltered when it was their turn to lead. After all, no matter how intelligent and skilled a person is, it's impossible to know how a person will behave in a certain situation until they're faced with it. So my grandfather created two versions of the testing as an experiment, one for colony students and the other for those from Tosu City. When Dr. Barnes turns away from me, I realize this could be my chance. Slowly, I slide to the edge of the chair. There's a knife in the side pocket of my bag. If I can reach it... The colony candidates' testing became harder, more stressful in order to see which students could succeed in spite of the pressure and which would break under the strain. Perhaps it shouldn't come as a surprise that the largest advancements in genetic manipulation, medicine, and in cleansing our water have been made by those who came from the colonies and passed through the testing. Successful candidates like your father and President Wendig. Over the years, the testing has proven to be an effective tool, which is why President Colander is now insisting that all applicants for the university, including the ones from Tosu City, be required to take part in it. Icy shock streaks up my spine. That's not true. President Colander wants to end the testing. I know Dr. Barnes is lying. Until recently, the president didn't understand what candidates were forced to go through. Her desire to learn more about the testing was one of the reasons she had me assigned to be her intern. No, my dear. He sees my proximity to the bag and extends the gun in front of him. His eyes hold mine, waiting for me to make a choice. Slowly, I sit back. With a smile, he lowers the gun and continues. While you would like to believe differently, ending the testing is the last thing President Colander wants. After 100 years, other countries in the world are reaching out, some in friendship, others... Well, let's just say that our leaders will need to stay strong in order for our country to survive what comes next. Despite my growing concerns about the elimination of so many bright minds through the testing, President Colander believes that those losses are minor compared to the number of casualties we'll incur if our leadership should falter. My mind races back to my conversations with President Colander about the testing. In each, she talked of ending Dr. Barnes's control of the process. Never once did she actually say she intended to eliminate the testing itself. But that proves nothing. I look at the half-empty glass sitting in front of Dr. Barnes. Is he telling the truth now? There's no way to know. I tamp down the uncertainty rising inside me and ask, "What about the redirected students? Does President Colander know that you and your scientists are experimenting on them?" "Ah, you've been busy learning all of our secrets." But his frown and the flicker of confusion that crosses his face make me wonder if he truly knows everything that I've done. Yes, the president receives monthly reports from Professor Cartwright and Dr. Bates that outline the success of their resourcing program. She's fully aware of their progress in the study of human mutations caused by the wars, although she believes Professor Cartwright is being too cautious in his use of the subjects. Results are important, especially if the reports we're getting from beyond our country's borders are accurate. I want to ask about the reports he's hinted at, but as important as those are, it's the faces of those who didn't pass the first rounds of the testing that haunt me and make me ask, where are they? Where are the experiments being conducted? In Decatur Colony. There is no Decatur Colony. I would have heard. Everyone in the Commonwealth would have. Five Lakes was the last colony established, and that was more than 25 years ago. The colony isn't like the others. It was established as a base for research close enough to the boundaries of the fourth test that unsuccessful experimentation can be released into a closely monitored environment. It's the way he looks at me, expectant, as if he's waiting for an answer. Unsuccessful experimentation. Horror squeezes my chest. I see the eyes that met mine when I raised my gun on the unrevitalized planes and fired. Angry. Bitter. Human. I remember the screams as my bullet made impact and took a life. If Dr. Barnes is to be believed, it might have been the life of a former testing candidate who was redirected, turned into a resource, and then discarded. Before I can recover my voice, Dr. Barnes goes on. President Colander and I disagree on a number of things, which is why you, Sia, are here. I chose you to be our own personal test, a candidate from a colony we've not selected a student from in years, one who is unlike the type of leader President Colander and the rest of the testing committee insists will be necessary for our country to survive the future. The president was positive a student with your background would crack under the pressure, that you'd be incapable of doing what is necessary to keep your country safe. A piece falls into place. Simon helped me during the fourth phase of testing because you told him to. He nods. Why? I needed you to think clearly about your interview answers so that I could make a case for you being accepted to the university. Many on the committee had already expressed concern that you were too emotional and displayed qualities they felt were inappropriate in our leaders. I needed you to be in control during those final moments of the testing so no one would ask too many questions when you were passed through to the university, which is what needed to happen. Because that was the only way you could be here at this, your final and most important test. President Colander has agreed to abide by the results. If you pass this one last exam, the testing program will end. If you fail, it will move forward as it currently stands and students will continue to die. What is the test? I ask. Vaguely, I'm aware of the sound of footsteps and raised voices outside the door. But that doesn't matter. Nothing matters except this moment. My throat is dry and my heart pounds as I stare into Dr. Barnes's eyes, looking for the truth. What do I have to do? Why, that should be obvious. He walks around the table to where I sit and turns the butt of the gun toward me. It's up to you to make sure that I die. I stare at the handle of the weapon in his hands. In my mind, I take it. I aim. I fire. The testing is ended. All of this is over. But all I can do is stare at the gun, trying to decide what new test lies behind Dr. Barnes's words. I don't understand, I say. Of course you do, he smiles. I want to end the testing. For that to happen, sacrifices need to be made. It seems only fitting that I am the one to make this one, since I've been a part of this process for so long, and truly this is the only way for the testing to come to an end. The testing has helped our country get through the darkest time in our history. People have come to trust the system and the leaders it produces. They believe in it. Because they don't understand what the testing entails, I insist. You aren't that naive, Sia, he chides. They might not admit it, even to themselves, but more people than you think understand what the testing involves. Most choose to pretend they're ignorant of the facts because the system works. The idea of changing it scares them more than giving it their tacit approval. But you, my dear, are here to test whether the system really does function as well as we believe. In previous years, despite your grades and your performance in the fourth test, you would never have passed the testing. Without the drug provided by Simon, you would have answered the interview questions truthfully. Your natural inclination to trust and your lack of killer instinct would have been apparent. Those qualities that have rallied friends to your side would have caused you to fail, because those characteristics are viewed as weaknesses by the selection committee. Today you will prove that the testing and the reasoning behind it are flawed. The president doesn't believe students like you have what it takes to do what is required when your country demands it. By killing me, you prove that I'm right in my convictions and she's wrong. Kill me, and this all comes to an end. He places the gun in my lap, takes a step back, and folds his hands in front of him. I am sorry, Ms. Vale, but after all that you have done, I have to ask that you take this one last test. You now have all the facts at your disposal. What will your answer be?
Chapter 20. I wrap my fingers around the gun and stand. Slowly, I extend the weapon in front of me. I walked into this building resolved to kill, but I could never have imagined that Dr. Barnes would stand quietly in front of me, asking me to take his life. He created the tests, selected the candidates, and forced them into situations in which giving the correct answer was not enough. The president has asked for his death. Killing him will mean an end to the testing. His eyes fill with sympathy. The expression on his face is one of understanding and acceptance. I steel myself against the doubt that swirls inside me. Dr. Barnes calls this a test. If so, it's one I don't completely understand, and one I can't fail. I have to shoot. For Zandri, Malachi, and all those who didn't pass. For Daylene and the others who could be a part of the testing in the future. For me. I jump at the sound of voices raised in anger. Running footsteps. Someone is coming. Friend? Foe? It doesn't matter. All that matters are the gun in my hand and the man waiting for my answer. My hand trembles as I search within myself for the truth. Something crashes into the door, making it shake. Dr. Barnes's eyes meet mine. Your time is almost up, Sia. I don't take my eyes off the man who stands before me. Is he the monster I've always believed, or someone who is now making the ultimate sacrifice as a means of righting wrongs and finding redemption? The answer shouldn't matter, but it does. Everything depends on this moment. I need to fire. I need to kill. But I can't. No matter how much I want to succeed, I know that Dr. Barnes was wrong to choose me. Because I can't look into the eyes of an unarmed man and fire. No matter what answer I give to this test, I know that ultimately it will cause me to fail. Out of the corner of my eye, I see the door to my right open. Lowering my weapon, I turn and see Simon standing in the entryway with his gun raised. Behind him are two more men, both armed, and their weapons are all pointed at me. Put your gun down on the table, Sia. After you're surviving this long, it would be a shame for it all to end here. Simon takes a step toward me. His shirt is torn. Blood and char streak his pants. He must have still been inside Dr. Barnes's house when it exploded. The hand that holds the gun poised to fire at me does not tremble. Simon's eyes are flat and cold. He won't think twice about ending my life. I know I have no choice. My fingers tremble as I set the gun on the table next to me. Nodding, he calls over his shoulder, "Guard the elevator and the stairs. The president might have sent people here, too. Once we have a plan in place, we'll be leaving." The two men hurry down the hall as Simon turns his attention to Dr. Barnes. "When you missed our meeting at your house, Jedediah, I was worried. The person who attacked me and the bomb that went off there concerned me even more. The students here on campus have been leading an unauthorized assault on the officials Professor Holt assigned to keep the campus locked down." That's what the fighting I heard outside was. Ian must have convinced the rebel students to turn against Simon. Dr. Barnes frowns. I thought you said you had the students under control.
I did, but things have started to unravel. Renetta is refusing to deploy her teams around the city. Instead, she's convinced most of them, including many in my faction, to stay in camp. I don't think we can wait for the rebels to hit first. If they're going to be eliminated...
The rebels aren't going to be eliminated, Dr. Barnes says.
Simon goes still. I don't understand.
Dr. Barnes smiles and puts his hand in his pocket. When he pulls it out, he's holding a small gun. The president and I have come to an understanding. Too many people know about the testing, the rebellion, and the redirection project.
The rebels?
Not just the rebels, my friend. Dr. Barnes's face is filled with sorrow as he steps toward Simon. I am forgotten while they study each other. I slowly reach for my gun as Dr. Barnes says, "The time has come for all three to come to an end. The country is better for them, but they have served their purpose. I wish you had died in the explosion I created. After Ms. Vale's heroics, I thought it appropriate. And then I wouldn't have to do this."
Simon understands the words a moment too late. I jump at the crack of gunfire. Simon reels back. Blood blooms on his shoulder, just inches from his heart as he screams and fires back. Dr. Barnes shouts and another gunshot explodes as I turn to flee. A familiar figure fills the doorway, blocking my path. Sweat glistens off Griffin's head, and he raises a large black gun. This time I don't think, I pull the trigger. Surprise crosses Griffin's face and he grabs the door. I fire again. Red spatters his face. As he falls, I run. I race down the hall. Three shots ring out from the room behind me. Someone inside is still alive. At the end of the hall, I see the outline of a man raising a gun. I run to the left, toward the double doors as he fires. I slip back into the lecture hall, close the door, and lock it. The lock will not keep them out for long, but it buys me a few seconds to figure out what I need to do next. The room is black as night. The door handle rattles. I run my hand along the chairs beside me to keep my balance as I navigate the stairs as fast as I dare. There's shouting on the other side of the door, two voices. Simon's is the loudest as he yells for the other to stand back. I reach the bottom of the stairs and hurry across the aisle between the stage and the front row of chairs as five gunshots slam into the door. I duck down behind the chairs as the door crashes open. Lights flicker to life above me. I hold my breath and crouch as low as I can while still remaining on my feet so I'm ready to flee. To my right is the stage where Dr. Barnes once stood. The podium is there. Far to the left, I see a narrow door. Too far away for me to reach now, but maybe I can find a way. Someone is on the stairs. Another is near the back of the hall, moving down the aisle. From the hall outside the room, I hear more footsteps. The other man Simon brought with him? Two against one is bad odds, but three against one? I tighten my hold on the gun. I will only get one chance to fire. Whoever is with Simon will see me the minute I rise. He will fire too. I will die. But so will Simon. I won't allow myself to die without a fight. The person coming down the stairs is moving slower than the one in the back. His footsteps sound heavier, like a man who's injured. He will be my target. A voice shouts from the hallway. Whoever is out there will be here in moments. Then I will face three opponents. I think of those I love and have the whisper of Tomas's name in my heart as I swallow down my fear and stand. I was right. Simon stands three quarters of the way down the side aisle. His eyes widen in surprise as he sees me. Blood coats the hand holding the gun that takes aim. The footsteps in the hall stop. Three figures appear in the door as I squeeze the trigger. Sound explodes around me. Simon drops to the ground and rolls down the last two stairs to the front aisle as searing pain pierces my right arm. I turn toward the man who shot me and fire again, but miss as he darts to the left. And I'm not sure if I would have hit him anyway. The burning ache in my arm is making it hard to keep a grip on the gun. Simon's man turns and takes aim as a voice calls my name. Tomas. Another shot cracks the air. Simon's man stumbles backward into one of the chairs. Blood seeps from the wound in his chest as he sinks to the ground. My arm is on fire. The world spins in and out of focus, but none of that matters as Tomas races down the stairs toward me. His clothes are covered in dirt, and a ragged cut runs down one side of his face. But he's here, whole, alive. Over Tomas's shoulder, I see two other people running down the stairs. One is Will, the other Zine. I look behind them for Stacia, but don't see her. Did Tomas have to leave her behind because of her injury? Or is she looking to make sure Dr. Barnes is dead? I'm about to ask when my brother says, "I want my transit communicator back." Despite the pain I feel, laughter erupts out of me. Zine flashes the smile that I grew up idolizing as he rushes toward me. I start to reply when I see movement to my left. The barrel of Simon's gun as it's placed in position. I push Tomas to the side and raise my weapon, but I know I will be too late. That after all I've been through, I will die as Simon pulls the trigger. Gunfire fills the room. A scream rips from my throat, but the bullet never finds me because Zine gets there first. My brother jerks as the bullet punches into him and groans when he hits the ground next to Simon. I don't hesitate as I squeeze the trigger of my weapon. A wound blooms in Simon's chest. A second from Will's gun appears in his left temple, and Simon drops to the ground. Zine. I can barely whisper his name as I kneel next to him, ignore the pain in my arm, and roll him over to see the injury he has sustained. I choke back a sob as I see the hole in his chest. Instinctively, I reach for my bag to find something to help, but my bag isn't there, and even if it were, I know there is no healing this wound. Zine's lungs have been damaged, maybe his heart. It won't be long before both stop working. Despite what I know to be true, I scream for Will and Tomas to find someone to help us. I don't care if I'm arrested and punished. Zine needs to live. There has been enough loss, enough death. Too high a price has been paid. I can't lose him. Not now. Not when we are finally together again. Will yells that he'll go to the medical residence to find help and disappears out the door. When Tomas finally moves, I think that he too is going to look for aid, that he believes there's a chance Zine could live. Instead, he kneels opposite me next to Zine and takes Zine's other hand in his. I see tears streak down Tomas's face. I want to cry, but there are no tears to wash away a loss this huge. Dr. Flint used to say that the severest wounds often can't be felt by the victim because the nerves are too damaged to transmit pain. Seeing Zine in my arms struggling to breathe has cut too deep for tears. He coughs and I smooth back his hair and whisper encouraging words like he used to do when I was little and scared or sick. I tell him that I love him. That I'm so glad I'm with him now, that everything will be okay. But it won't, because Zine's breathing is becoming shallower, his heartbeat is slowing, and his eyes are filled with anguish. "Do you still have your bag?" I ask Tomas. "Can you give him something for the pain?" Tomas looks down at Zine and nods. He stands and walks to where he dropped his bag. He pulls out two bottles. One marked with a circle, the other with an X. I see the question in his eyes as he holds them out to me. Zine coughs. His hand tightens around mine. His face is drained of color. His chest barely rises as he takes his next breath. I reach out and take the bottle with the circle on it and help him drink. Maybe it's selfish of me, but I want these last moments with him to last as long as they can. It will be hard enough to go on after Zine is gone. I can't be the one to bring about the final moment of his life.
See ya, Zine whispers. Remember what I said when you graduated. And tell Mom and Dad I saved you. They'll be proud.
They find us sitting with our hands joined. Tomas, Zine, and me. Zine's heart has stopped. He's no longer in pain. I try to console myself with that, as safety officials don't shoot, but instead ask us to stand. When I try, I find I cannot. I'm too dizzy, too tired, too overwhelmed. They let Tomas help me into one of the chairs as a medical team works on my arm. Tomas sits beside me as they clean and bandage our injuries. When I ask about Stacia, anguish crosses Tomas's face, and I know before he says it that she's dead. Tomas tells me he'll explain everything later, but that she died at Professor Chen's house. When he falls silent, I don't press for answers, because I've had enough of death. My arm throbs, but the pain lessens when the medical team applies an ointment and begins to wrap the wound with a bandage. They've done all they can here and will need to treat me further to prevent infection or a terrible scar, as if anything they can do will prevent the scars I will wear from this night forever. A team of officials in purple appear. I think they must be coming to arrest me, but instead they walk to where Zine lies. I scream when they try to carry Zine's body out. That's when President Colander arrives. She tells them to leave Zine with us and orders her staff to remove Simon and to keep everyone else out. When the medical officials are finished, she asks them to leave us alone. She allows Tomas to stay, which is good. He would have refused to go. Once she's alone with Tomas and me, she says, "There is much we need to discuss, but most of it can be done in the days and weeks ahead. My officials found Dr. Barnes down the hall. He and Simon are both dead. But that is not true of everyone on the list I gave you." Dr. Barnes is dead. I close my eyes and try to feel relief that someone succeeded in killing him when I could not. After all, he is the reason my brother and so many others lost their lives. But there is no joy in his death, only sadness and a sense of confusion, since I will never know whether his final words were the truth, that he believed the testing should end and was willing to give up his life to make sure that it did. I open my eyes and choose my words carefully as I reply to the president's unspoken question. Since Simon had a hand in creating the list, I decided it was best to learn what I could about the people on it. Of the 12, only 5 were involved in the university and testing process in a way that eliminating them would affect your agenda. Those are the ones we opted to remove.
I'm impressed, President Colander smiles. It's not always easy to lead with caution, especially with so much at stake. After giving you the list, I began to wonder if Simon included some opponents of the testing. Had they been killed, you would have eliminated those who could have been influential dissenters. Are her words the truth, or did she herself have reason to want those people removed, as Dr. Barnes's explanation suggested? The president's stolid expression provides no insight.
For your sake and the sake of your friends, she says, we will make a public announcement that the deaths of several prominent officials and members of the university came at the hands of one Simon Dean, the leader of a group created to destabilize the Commonwealth and our revitalization mission. He will also be blamed for the explosions that occurred here on campus and on the other side of town, as well as for the deaths of the students and officials who've been fighting tonight. I've already talked to the leader of the students who believed they were doing what was necessary to help end the testing. He and his fellow students will be given amnesty for their actions, as will all those who followed Simon.
And is that when you'll announce that the testing will end? I ask. President Colander straightens her shoulders. As she looks at me, I recall the words Dr. Barnes spoke tonight. Does she know that I was not the one who killed Dr. Barnes? Have my actions been sufficient to prove that I'm strong enough to be a leader, even though it was not my hand that accomplished that task? If Simon killed him before coming after me, then there's no one to tell her differently. But if someone else was behind the act and Dr. Barnes was being honest, I'm not sure what she'll do.
Yes. She smiles again. I will also announce that the university selection process known as the testing will end once the university and its programs are legally shifted under the debate chamber's jurisdiction. I will direct the chamber to choose a new head of the school and institute some necessary changes.
What kinds of changes?
It will be a while before that can be determined, but I can promise you that none of the candidates for our university will have to go through the trials you did.
Her smile is reassuring, but her words are not. My brother and my friends did not sacrifice their lives for half promises.
What about the students who failed to pass the testing, I ask? The ones in Decatur Colony, what will happen to them?
For several heartbeats, there is silence as President Colander studies me, gauging how much I know, how much she should say.
I've only recently learned that there is a research group known as Decatur Colony. Perhaps you will be interested in taking a trip there with me to see what work is being done.
I think of Rafe's final request that I find his sister Emily, and I nod. I would.
Good. She smiles. I assure you that changes will be made. There are a number of challenges ahead, and whether someone attends the university or not, I intend to see that the brightest minds from the colonies and Tosu City are put to the best use possible. Because of that, it is my plan to allow students who are unhappy with the university to request to return home to their families. I'm certain those who do will find a way to contribute to our revitalization mission from there.
Tomas's hand tightens on mine, and I know he's thinking the same thing I am. We can go home.
Do you have any more questions, Sia?
I have dozens, but I'm sure I will never hear the answers to the most important ones. I look at President Colander's sincere expression and think of the tension I felt between her and Dr. Barnes the day I was assigned to my internship. I think of the worry she expressed at the number of candidates and students who came to the university and failed to graduate. She spoke of the desire to remove Dr. Barnes in order to end the practices that he perpetuated, and charged me with helping her create that change. I want to believe her, to deny that anything Dr. Barnes said about her was real. After all, he was the one who watched my testing roommate's body be cut free while explaining that her suicide proved the testing's methods worked. Could that man who was responsible for so many deaths have really wanted the testing to change? Was he right about President Colander? Is it true that she not only knows the fate of those who have been redirected, as her own words indicate, but approves of what has been done to them? Does she believe the testing should be made even more difficult and be inflicted upon more than just colony-born students? Despite what she says now, will the testing that Tomas and I were forced to participate in really end? Dr. Barnes said that my greatest asset is my ability to trust my instincts. I have to trust them now.
Do I believe Dr. Barnes?
I don't want to, but I do. And now that he's dead, there's only one way to know if I'm right.
Do you have any other questions for now, Sia?
President Colander asks again.
Yes, I do, I say. Would you mind if I get my university bag from the interview room?
She rises.
Of course not, although you understand that any tools you might have borrowed to complete your task will have to be returned to the storage facility in my office.
It takes me two tries to get out of my chair. The room shifts, but I stay on my feet. Tomas offers an arm to help me balance as I navigate the stairs, but I refuse. This is something I must do on my own. President Colander follows us out. I feel her eyes on us as, side by side, Tomas and I walk to the end of the now brightly illuminated lecture hall. A purple-clad official wipes blood off the floor near the entrance to the interview room. Griffin's body has been moved. As I step through the doorway, I see a body lying on the floor with a small gun near one hand. Blood pools near the head, matting the gray hair that had given the man an air of authority and wisdom. His face is turned away from me, and though I know who it is from the clothing and the gun, I move several steps closer. There is a bullet wound in Dr. Barnes's shoulder that was not there when I last saw him, but that wasn't what killed him. The three bullet wounds clustered near his heart are the obvious cause of his death. I wonder if those three holes will give me away, because never could I shoot with that kind of skill. As soon as we leave, they will collect the body. I gave you this task, but I wasn't sure you would be able to see it through. When your friend told me that you had, I was pleased to know that the faith I placed in you and your abilities was not mistaken. My friend? I look at Tomas, who shrugs. He's not the one who claimed I killed Dr. Barnes. Then who? Yes, she says. The dark-haired boy with the green eyes. Will. I saw him after I heard Dr. Barnes had been killed and asked him what he knew. He was worried you'd feel guilty after everything that had happened and that you wouldn't accept the credit for what you'd done. He thinks you're a hero. I'm not. After everything that has happened, it's the only thing I'm certain of. President Colander smiles. I had a feeling you'd say that. The decisions that leaders have to make are never easy, including this one. You took a life, but just think how many more were saved. Not Zine's. Lives were saved, yes, but not by me. By Will. I look again at the bloody hole in Dr. Barnes's shoulder and the three precise gunshot wounds in his chest. Simon must have caused the first as he ran to find me. Simon was injured when he fired. I'm not sure he could have fired with the accuracy it would have taken to create the fatal wounds. But someone who was a known marksman like Will could have. His main skill lies with a crossbow, as he demonstrated in the fourth test. But I remember how he took down Roman, and know his skill with a gun doesn't lag far behind. Simon might have inflicted the three wounds that killed Dr. Barnes, but my gut tells me no. This was Will's work. Will wasn't here when Dr. Barnes explained his bargain with President Colander. He couldn't have known that crediting me with the kill was the only way to end the testing we both despised. Yet that's what he did. The Will I knew during the fourth test would have taken the credit for his actions. He would have wanted whatever reward he thought would come with bringing down the president's foe. Instead, this time, he passed to me whatever accolades he felt would be delivered. Because Will isn't just the boy who shot and betrayed. Just as I am not just the naive girl from Five Lakes. Now I have to decide for certain whether Dr. Barnes was the man I believed him to be, and whether President Colander is the person she says she is. Walking to the table, I look at the glass Dr. Barnes drank from and the liquid that remains at the bottom. I put the glass to my lips and take a small sip. The flavor makes me grimace as Dr. Barnes did, metallic, bitter. The taste that I remember from months ago in this same room. When Dr. Barnes watched and waited and hoped that I would be confident and coherent enough to pass through to the university. He hoped I would prove that the testing was flawed and that by my hand and through his sacrifice, it all would be ended. Are you ready, Sia? President Colander asks. Everything Dr. Barnes told me was the truth. Sia, are you ready? She asks again. I look at the president and then around the room, my mind filled with questions, only some of which I can answer. For the rest, I will have to do what is necessary to obtain the truth. Come on, Sia, Tomas says, taking my bag from the table.
Let's go home.
Chapter 21. Home. On the outskirts of Five Lakes, I sit under an oak tree that my brother Zine helped create. My father and I have visited this site every day since I've come home. Today I'm here alone. In my hands is the transit communicator that Zine once owned. The mate to this communicator is buried next to him. Tears that I could not shed the night he died fall freely now that I'm surrounded by reminders of him. The night of my graduation, we stood under an oak like this. On that night, Zine spoke to me the words that in the moments before he died, he asked me to remember. Back then, the two of us stood in the shadows together, both disappointed about our futures. Me because I thought I hadn't been chosen for the testing. He because he felt trapped by the boundaries of Five Lakes and the lack of recognition for what he'd achieved. In that moment, he told me, "Things don't always work out the way we hope. You just have to pick yourself up and find a new direction to go in." Nothing about what has happened this past year has turned out the way I had dreamed of. Yet remembering Zine's words has given me comfort, and knowing he died to save my life has made me more determined to see that his sacrifice is never forgotten. Above me, leaves rustle on the tree. Sunlight, bright and filled with hope, shines on the four grave markers beside me, each etched with a symbol and a name so that the sacrifices of those who died will live in the memory of everyone from Five Lakes. Zine Vale, beneath two crossed lightning bolts. An arrow under the name Malachi Rourke. A stylized flower and the name Zandri Hicks. And Michael Gallen, with the symbol of an anchor. He wasn't from Five Lakes, but I insisted he be included. Honored for the help he gave and the sacrifice he made, without him, change would not have come. And there has been change. 3 weeks have passed since that night in the testing center. I spent much of that time in the university medical building, getting treatment, talking to Enzo, who's still in the early stages of the healing process, sitting with Tomas, and watching Rafe through a window as he fought for his life. The medical team is amazed that Rafe has survived this long and that each day his vital signs get stronger. Caught in the blast that was meant to kill Simon, Rafe is determined to live. And now he has an even larger reason to fight for his life. The president stood by her word. 3 days after that night in the testing center, I accompanied her and her team to Decatur Colony. Since Tomas is not part of the president's staff, he was not allowed to join us. I'm glad, because I'm uncertain how he would have handled what we found there. I'm not sure what I expected, but it wasn't a community twice the size of Five Lakes Colony, with medical facilities more advanced than any I'd seen in Tosu City, located on the outskirts of the colony. But unlike those wards, these contained patients in various stages of chemically induced mutations. Not as many as I would have thought, considering the number of redirected students sent here every year. Four in each of the five stages being studied. Two male, two female. Those in the worst stages arched their backs and extended their claws as researchers stood behind glass walls taking notes. When I asked, I learned why there are so few. The others deemed beyond help were turned out onto the testing grounds to mingle with the mutations that were created by war instead of by this lab. The scars on my arm tingled as I stared into their eyes and wondered if these patients knew the mutated humans I shot during the fourth test. I wish I knew their names, but the newly appointed head of Decatur Colony's research team, Drew Owens, doesn't know the identities of those I killed, or whether they were research subjects or natural mutations like the ones scientists are hoping eventually to treat and cure. Drew told me that, after being assigned to Decatur Colony, he wanted to leave when he realized most residents and test subjects were former testing candidates and redirected university students. But he didn't, because now that he understands the work being done, he can't leave behind those who suffered. Not if there's a chance of curing them. And from the partially cured human and animal mutations Drew showed us, I believe there really may be a chance. But not if those in charge continue the practices that have been employed up till now. Because while many former candidates and students are content to be working in labs and helping to discover a cure, there are others who are bitter and angry, who believe that the methods being used are wrong, and who live in fear that they might be chosen as the next subject for experimentation. Drew has already announced that he will limit research to subjects who've already suffered mutations, and that those who are unhappy in their current work will be able to request a transfer to another project. Over the president's objections, I insisted on taking two Decatur Colony residents with me, Rafe's sister Emily and Will's twin brother Gil. Both had been assigned to work in the labs and seemed to be undamaged. It appears they had escaped scientific testing. After seeing what they could have been faced with, I'm glad they are untouched. Both have been reunited with their brothers. The smile I saw on Will's face was the same one I remember him wearing the first time we met. He and Gil exchanged jokes and finished each other's sentences as if they'd never been apart. Seeing their happiness made me hold back the questions I will someday ask. About Dr. Barnes, the bullet holes, the credit Will gave me. But even without hearing the answers, I can see the truth. When Will's smile fades and he thinks no one is watching, he's living with the memories of what he's done, something his brother and Emily don't have to do. All memory of the time spent in Decatur Colony has been removed from them. The president and her advisors believe limiting the memory of those who return from the colony and the public's information about the research done there is essential to retaining peace. Another secret kept for the good of our country. When I consider the president's logic, I can't disagree, and yet part of me wonders if we can ever truly learn from what we've done if we continue to suppress or erase the past. And yet there's hope that we've learned something. Last week, I watched from the debate chamber gallery as President Colander kept her bargain with Dr. Barnes. Standing at the podium, looking out on a filled chamber and observation area, the president announced the disbanding of the university selection process known as the testing. Current university students will continue their education under the temporary direction of Professor Douglas Lee, head of early studies and professor of history. Meanwhile, the president and her office will work closely with the education department to create a new selection system for the university, one that will be the same for both Tosu City and colony students. The city is buzzing about the traitor who killed Dr. Barnes, Professor Holt, Official Jeffries, and Professor Chen. I know now that only three of them should be dead. In the days following the attack and Dr. Barnes' death, I learned that Professor Chen was pushing for a reevaluation of the testing's purpose and the method of selecting new students. Tomas and Stacia learned of Professor Chen's true intent when they went to her house. Once she was restrained, Tomas wanted to leave, but Stacia refused. A bullet at close range from Stacia's gun killed Professor Chen. Stacia was determined to follow the president's instructions. The United Commonwealth president was Stacia's leader, not me. Stacia died moments later. Tomas says it was self-defense. I have not pressed him. Perhaps because I can see the real answer in the shadows that fill his eyes. Maybe someday he'll tell me why he killed Stacia, but I doubt it. In his mind, what happened is over. It's time to move on. My name has not been mentioned in conjunction with Dr. Barnes's death or the elimination of the others, nor have the names of Tomas, Ian, Rafe, Stacia, and Will, though our friends from our former study group helped us create a marker decorated with the symbol Rafe created to honor Stacia. We placed it next to the one Professor Holt hung for Rawson, a fitting tribute, I hope, for a girl who wanted more than anything to be important. She and I might not have agreed on much in the end, but for better or worse, she was still my friend. I miss her. Thanks to the president's official version of events, I can go on with my life without anyone knowing about the task the president gave me and the choices I made. Tomas is grateful. I suppose I am, too, although I've already told the truth to my family around the same kitchen table where I learned how to divide and multiply. I notice my brothers no longer tease me as easily as they used to. My mother tries to pretend nothing is different, but I've seen her watching me. I know she wants me to be the same girl who left home, and I try my best to act like her, but we both know I'm not. My father is the only one who truly understands, perhaps because he too has been tested. I stand and look to the west. Far in the distance, I see the current boundaries of Five Lakes Colony and the unrevitalized area beyond. There's much good I can do here. I love being home, even though once again I'm sleeping in front of the fireplace to avoid hearing my brother's snores. Magistrate Owens has already asked me for ideas about enhancing our communications with Tosu City and the other colonies, as well as my thoughts on better ways to create and manage our colony's power. Tomas is happy because he's been offered a place on my father's team. If he proves himself, he'll be able to create a team of his own. Being home has lifted Tomas's spirits. He's more like the boy I knew before leaving for Tosu City. Surrounded by family, he's begun to heal, though he too will never forget. Despite our not having graduated from the university, everyone here considers Tomas and me leaders. The opportunity we've been offered to help our colonies is exactly what we dreamed of when we hoped to be selected for the testing. Tomas is eager to start working with my father and to build our lives here. I long to stay, to be happy. But as much as I want to be with Tomas and my family, each day that passes convinces me that I cannot. Five Lakes is as wonderful as I remember. I will visit as often as I can and will always find peace here. I wish I could go back to who I was, but I'm different. This is my home, but it is no longer where I belong. Holding the transit communicator tight to my chest, I slowly walk to town where Tomas waits for me. I'm going to tell him that I have to go back. But he will know my choice the minute he sees the bracelet that circles my wrist. This is not the path I dreamed of while growing up, but it's the one I have to walk. Because the only way to be sure the testing we had to survive never happens again is not to trust our leaders. It is to be one of them. I walk up the hill and into the square. Tomas stands near the fountain that sprays sparkling clean water into the air. When he sees me, a smile filled with love spreads across his face. In his hands are daisies he must have picked on his way here. As I walk toward him, I smile back with all the love in my heart. Tomorrow I will return to Tosu City. I will move into a new room at the university and will complete my studies and my internship. I will tell Brick, Naomi, and Vic the truth behind what has happened. And when Enzo and Rafe recover, I will ask them all to help me keep watch over the president and our other leaders to ensure that nothing like the testing ever happens again. If I have to travel the path I have chosen alone, I will. But as Tomas's mouth meets mine, I hope deep in my heart that he will understand the choice I've made and will once again make the journey to Tosu City with me. Because despite what I've learned and what I've done, I'm still the girl from Five Lakes who wants to lead and help my country. And there is so much still for me to do.
The End. You've been listening to Graduation Day by Joelle Charbonneau, narrated by Elizabeth Morton. If you've enjoyed this book and this performance, Recorded Books recommends Pills and Starships by Lydia Millett, narrated by Mojan Marnot. In this richly imagined dystopic future brought by global warming, 17-year-old Nat and her hacker brother Sam have come by ship to the Big Island of Hawaii for their parents' final week. The few Americans who still live well also live long, so long that older adults bow out not by natural means, but by buying death contracts from the corporates, who now run the disintegrating society by keeping the people happy through a constant diet of pharma. Nat's family is spending their pharma-guided last week at a luxury resort complex called the Twilight Island Acropolis. Deeply conflicted about her parents' decision, Nat spends her time keeping a record of everything her family does in the company-supplied diary that came in the hotel's care package. While Nat attempts to come to terms with her impending parentless future, Sam begins to discover cracks in the corporate's agenda and eventually rebels against the company his parents have hired to handle their last days. Nat has to choose a side. Does she let her parents go gently into that good night, or does she turn against the system and try to break them out? Recorded Books offers a wide selection of bestsellers, mysteries, classics, histories, and more. So look for us at your public library or on download sites online. And thank you for being a Recorded Books reader.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.